Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, the TSR logo artist responds.
Oh, okay.
Limitless Heroes, a supplement for 5e. Dave Arneson's movie inspiration for Castle Blackmore.
Okay.
And the Mjölkborg compatible bundle.
Oh, right.
Bundle of holding. So let's get started with the artist, Darlene Artist, posted a very lengthy response on Facebook after being approached. Oh, wait. I think we need the...
Oh, yep, we're there.
Where is it? Where is it? Sorry, this is super unprofessional. Is it? No, it can't be here.
Well, it's also tiny. I don't know how you see that with the computer like a mile away. There you go.
All right. And it's not animated. Oh, do I have there it set? It's animated. Oh, there we go. So a further installment of As the Gygax Turns.
My goodness.
So Darlene Artist, which how she's listed on Facebook, posted a lengthy reply to TSR3, and specifically Justin Linassa's approaching her and asking for her permission to use. So she's the designer. She's the illustrator of the artist. The Wizard Head logo, classic TSR logo that they have been using, that this latest TSR has been using. And so she was approached with a monetary offer, I think, and some sort of paperwork to sign that says she's giving them permission to use this logo. And this is they need this, or they want this to kind of justify what they're doing after the legal action of Wizards of the Coast.
Which they dropped?
No, they dropped their legal action, but Wizards sues them for using TSR and specifically the logo. I think it was specifically the logo. So they approached the artist that did the logo that they're using. And so she posted a response on Facebook, basically saying, and it was interesting because she's basically saying, I don't want to get involved in this. I don't like what they're doing. But then she elaborated on her feelings about TSR in general. And it was very interesting.
This is like not TSR 3, just... The
original version, classic. Right. So as we know, the TSR, they appeared again. Ernie is now Gary Gygax Jr. On some of the things credits, that they're doing. Yep. They still have a Indiegogo to raise legal funds for a case that they dropped.
Yeah,
but they are being sued, or they did receive there's legal action
against
on WotC, right. For using that a trademark that
they don't own.
WotC owns, right? Yep. So. So part of her response was directly to Justin Linassa. I prefer not to directly involved in any lawsuit against WotC. Therefore, I do not give permission to use the Wizard's Head logo. Hmm. And things that he was saying to her were things like, we tried really hard to do something good with the TSR and bringing back the past and talking about those sorts of things, honoring the past and country. To honor and remember TSR, the dragon, Gary, and all the alumni of the old days. And then, this is very interesting, then she says, but I never want to return to Lake Geneva to relive those good old days, in quotes.
Yep, you could hear it.
Mm-hmm. So if I were to endorse the new TSR, this is her quote from Facebook, they have to correct the mistakes of old TSR. Mm. They must be kinder and more generous to artists and authors in their employ. They would need to show proper respect, listen to, and honor women, both within the gaming field and as consumers. They would need more inclusive and sensitive, and be sensitive enough to address the needs of the individuals beyond their white male demographic, and they would need to be fair to their customers and transparent in their actions.
Do we have one of those gifs of a mic drop that's like, boom?
Yeah, it was a big wow. And the title of her post was The Power of No. So talking about how this, this brought up a lot of things, and this was very empowering. So saying no to this offer or this about her her logo. And I think, it was probably work for hire that she did. So probably. I don't know why they're approaching her directly to get her involved.
Well, like you said, I'm not a legal expert by any means, right? I'm even on the outskirts of this. But like you said, I imagine they wanted some kind of proof they could hold up as legitimacy of, yes we kind of do. And when it's like, no, you don't. So even if it was work for hire, which means she no longer owned, like she kind of never did own that. Like you can say, I made it, but it belongs to someone else now, right? That's what kind of what work for hire does. So yeah, like they, I don't know if that would hold up in court. It was probably just kind of like moral support, right?
Right,
and
right.
For them going, okay, the person who made the logo said we can use it behind us. And
right,
just like, yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and to follow up a little bit on that, she said that TSR turned from being a all-for-one, one-for-all company into an uncaring corporate entity that was us versus them in their mindset. And I thought that was, very interesting.
And she's talking about TSR.
Yeah, original TSR.
Prior to being bought by Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so this power of no that she's talking about was no to bullying and unethical business practices, no to the unfair treatment and compensation of artists, creatives, and women, and no to taking advantage of disadvantaged to profit at their expense.
Yep.
So I thought that was great. And I guess they had no idea what they were messing with when they just kind of approached her here, we'll throw some money at you and just give us some
They obviously didn't. And part of me thinks, well, they're not blameless, but part of me thinks like they have blinders on anyway, so they probably had no idea this was going to come and be like, right? So it seems a weird thing to kind of compare it to, but you ever hear that advice for like proposal? Like if you're going to do a public wedding proposal, you better be damn sure you're going to get a yes unless you just want to be humiliated, right? Like
a jumbotron?
You didn't put in the work to kind of feel things out what you're going to get, and you just, I don't know if TSR3 did it publicly or whatever, but you obviously didn't anticipate this answer, or you wouldn't have asked.
Right. And it sounded like there was a little bit of back and forth, and they were trying to, we're the underdog, please pity us, support us. You kind of a little bit of a guilt trip to try to get some attention. But
they certainly got attention.
Right. And so that was another installment of As the Gygax Turns. So it'll keep coming up. I'm sure it will. All sorts of funny responses the way that they're handling things is just going to create interesting news for a while.
I mean funny sad as opposed to
Funny sad. Yeah.
Various definitions of funny, not humorous. Yeah. My goodness.
Boy. All right, so back to more D&D news.
Because we can't
avoid it. So Limitless Heroics, I think I called it Limitless Heroes. Limitless Heroics is a supplement for campaign play for D&D 5e. And this brings up something that we were kind of talking about when we talked about Oriental Adventures non-Eurocentric kind of settings, fantasy settings for fantasy RPGs. And it just made me think about this. And is this good or how is this to be used? So what this is a supplement that allows you to create characters featuring disabilities, neurodivergence, and mental illness in your for character creation in 5e. So it enables players to create characters who have a number of symptoms that may affect various aspects of their lives. So 450 symptoms of disabilities, neurodivergence, and mental illness. And the intent here is to support greater representation and understanding within tabletop of neurodivergence and various disabilities. And they talk about dozens of people with diverse symptoms have worked on this. So it is actually like, people that have real world experience of this. And the materials that they present reference real world examples to better help players to represent their characters with these symptoms in role playing games. And also with tutorials that discuss the whys and hows of the symptoms and how they should be represented in D&D 5e. And so I think if there is a player that has a need for this or really wants to, express this side of themselves or role play with this aspect of their actual real life personality or just challenges in their life, I guess that you would want some sort of formalized rules or something that would help you get at that instead of just kind of winging it, just kind of making things up, because it may end up being insulting or insensitive. But this material for people that it just feels a little odd and a little dangerous, and it may not actually be a learning tool, but just maybe something weird that ends up being kind of ridiculed or not played with very accurately at the table.
I think I can't really speak to the disability aspect. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, first I was like, okay, D&D 5 thing. Then you started talking about, I'm like, oh, okay, this seems kind of interesting. And then my initial question was, who was it written by?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because kind of like when you're doing anything similar to this, if it's written by, for lack of a better term, the in-group, then okay, I'll see it as a little bit more legitimate than someone who has no experience or is not of the culture of which they are writing. Mm-hmm. I see it kind of that way, right? But saying people were involved in it doesn't necessarily mean they wrote it. And I'm not saying they didn't write it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying involved in is a much broader term than wrote. Mm-hmm. Right? But I think more, I agree with your point about this could potentially be, weird is the wrong word I want to use, but that's the first thing that's coming to mind. Mm-hmm. Like this could be used as humor, right? Kind of inappropriate humor, mm-hmm, or, and it, that sounds like toilet humor, but that's not what I mean, right? Like, I think it's, what I'm thinking of is I'm thinking of a Fate supplement. There's like the Fate Accessibility Toolkit, mm-hmm, which does some, and I unfortunately haven't read it yet, does something very similar, right? It's, here's how to present these sort of things in your role-playing games. And again, it's written by, again, the kind of in-group people. But I think my brain's just all over the place today, right? Okay, I'm thinking of another Fate supplement, mm-hmm, that was called something like Deep Blue Sea or whatever. And everybody, you were like a submarine wreckage crew. And there was a huge discussion about one kind of person pointed out like, okay, well, you said people in a wheelchair can play. How? How are they maneuvering on a submarine? Mm-hmm. And the owners were like, basically kind of fuck you, buddy, right? We want everybody and anybody to be able to play this. And it's the fucking future. So let's imagine we can design stuff so that you can get around, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was, and I guess this gets into like future science fiction, especially like transhumanism and cyborg, right? If you present these things, especially in sci-fi or fantasy media, as something to be fixed, mm-hmm, with either magic or tech or whatever, what are you saying about people who currently have those disabilities? You're saying essentially you are broken and need to be fixed.
Right.
And that's really not what you want to say. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think, okay, I'm sure there's some people who want to try role-playing this, right? Kind of as an interesting, mm-hmm, maybe that's the wrong choice of word, as a, like a challenge or saying, right, I know people who have this disability, or maybe I have a mild form of this disability, or for whatever reason they want to play a character, a non-typical character. Okay, cool. I think it's more, or not more, perhaps better to say, people who have this actual disability are not broken. Mm-hmm. It's just part of their lives. And to better present a more realistic, mm-hmm, example of people in the world, that's going to include people with disabilities, and it's going to come up, and so here's how you handle it in game. And I don't necessarily know if that needs mechanics.
Right.
The first place my mind went was, unfortunately, Call of Cthulhu sanity mechanics.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, let's make a constitution check to see if your OCD pops out or whatever. Like, if that's what's in this book, then no thanks, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you said that about like things, you know, being fixed with magic or something, because they do also mention that they provide 100 magical items that are designed to assist people with these various symptoms.
That could potentially be a problem.
Yeah.
Or it could be something like, and I forget the creator's name, so like the combat wheelchair in D&D, where it's not like, we're presenting this to fix you. This is a real part of some people's lives, mm-hmm, therefore we want to reflect it in the game. Being not being able to walk or having to rely on a wheelchair for whatever reason should not prevent you from adventuring, mm-hmm, right? So it's not like we're fixing you, it's just like this is part of your character. So again, if those magic items are presented as, this is a reality some people have to live with, so let's mirror that in game, mm-hmm. Cool. If this is a, hey, here's your bionic limbs and ears and all this stuff and magic tech to make you normal, then no, that's don't do that.
Yeah, so this is being published by Wormworks Publishing. So it's a studio that's already dedicated themselves to representation of disabilities, neurodivergency, and mental illness already. So this is maybe kind of a, you know, a project that
right.
shows kind of the what they've done so far, kind of a collection of everything okay. done so far. So, and we're talking about this without having seen the actual text. So this is just the press release of this, and it made me think of that same sort of thing, like, because we talked about like a non-Eurocentric fantasy setting being interesting because it could be teaching. It could be educational, kind of broadening your idea of what fantasy could be and what, you know, what a party of adventurers or whatever would consist of. And I hope that this could work in that same way, but I worried seeing like, you know, lists of symptoms, and they even talked about an online generator to create character. So, I mean, maybe it's just like a digital component of that, but I just felt like this could go the wrong way, and
it definitely
could be used inappropriately.
We're definitely on the same page there, but like, again, this is the first, maybe people were talking about this on Twitter last week or something like that, but this is kind of the first I'm hearing of it. My knee-jerk reactions are only in response to this press release. I'll have to go and look up. But kind of like thinking about like NPC generators, if being neurotypical or atypical or disabled, like, that's people's reality. Again, why should that not be reflected in random tables to generate NPCs or characters? But as you said, it could go real bad. Like, I'm thinking of, like, we haven't played it in a while, and I don't know if I'd play it again because of just the dice mechanics, but like the Ubiquity, right? Uh-huh. Ubiquity in Savage Worlds, like, looking at some of those flaws, I'm like, let's not with that anymore. Like, that's not with the compulsive, let's not with the obesity, as obviously presented as flaws that you're going to get rewarded for taking with all this stuff. So if the character generator ends up being something like 101 ways to fuck up your character, then
that's true. And hopefully they do come up with good kind of vocabulary to use instead of flaws or you know, they have
hindrances,
some it comes up with some good things, but I just worry, just because some of the, you know, tabletop experience, when people can just use their alignment as the kind of disruptive thing in a party for a game, so I can't imagine like what, you know, bad intended people could do with mental illness and
kind of two minds. Because on the one hand, as someone who tries to make games, I don't think it's the designers, like, it's, unless we're talking about like board games or something like that, I don't think it's the designer's responsibility to present a set of rules that are airtight against bad actors because they don't exist. You cannot make that. Someone is always, if they come to the game with an intention to fuck up your rules, they are going to.
Right.
So presenting something like this, there are going to be some assholes who take advantage of it. All you have to do is know that, and in the front say, please don't be one of those people. Right? Or if you're going to be that, just don't use our player, user supplement, right? Don't do that. But on the other hand, if something like this is not, if you're not presenting something like this in a serious kind of way to be like seriously explored as a teaching or education tool at the table, then just don't.
No, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, if people want to go, oh, I'm going to be disruptive, well, just play the chaotic fucking neutral, right? Like, if someone goes, I'm going to be disruptive, and pick that, well, don't, right? I think ideally this would be designed or intended for people who go, this thing is a part of my life, therefore, right, I'm going to make it part of my character's life. Right. Or people who say, I kind of realistically and honestly want to explore what it is to have this whatever. I need some tools to do that. Okay.
Right.
We'll use this book, yeah.
Yeah, so, if we can get our hands on a copy, I'd be very, very curious.
After we've potentially bashed your book, if you want to send us a copy across the Pacific Ocean, shipping the way it is, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, but if we can find a digital version or something, I would definitely want to check that out. So, yeah, we may update if we have some further exploration. But something that I really love about the tabletop hobby is, and especially, like, you know, kind of people's passion and love for classic, you know, classic D&D and like the origins of the hobby. So DM David posted an excellent blog post about the inspiration and origins of dungeon crawling.
Okay.
Like where did this come from? And what is the first dungeon crawl that everyone kind of treats as, this is the origin of that style, is the dungeon under Castle Blackmoor. So that's Dave Arneson's Castle Blackmoor campaign. And this is a very, very exhaustive posting of every reference of this in every interview, every little, zine and blog and everything that's ever talked about this kind of goes through, and they narrow it down to, okay, in 1971, he said, I was doing this and was reading this and watching this, and I came up with the idea of a dungeon under a castle.
Okay, interesting.
So what the hell was he reading?
Right,
He was not specific at all. It was very general. So they actually went to the old TV listings, and they went through stories, all the events in the Conan collections that he would have had access to at that time in the early 70s, and kind of tried to pinpoint what were these inspirations. I thought this is really fun. It was really
someone who has a lot of time. I mean, this is awesome, but and I got a kid. I can never do this.
Right. So, Dave Blackmore's Dave Arneson's Blackmoor game was the campaign that spawned Dungeons and Dragons, and basically the idea of the dungeon crawl. So creating the dungeon crawl, Dave invented a new activity that transformed the campaign and ultimately made a lasting addition to popular culture, because everyone thinks of that when they think of fantasy RPGs.
In fact, if there are no dragons and or dungeons in your game, you're not going to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. And some of the original players' immediate reactions, Greg Svensson said, by the end of the weekend, I had fallen in love with this game because of that style of play. And of course, Dave McGarry was part of that original group, and he created the dungeon board game at that time, based on that, because that was such an exciting, crawling room to room concept. So to capture the dungeon experience, he created an actual board game based on that. So that was, almost simultaneously invented with the tabletop role playing as a board game aspect. So where did this come from? So of course we have things like the basic elements that we've seen are traps or treasures in a mummy's tomb,
right?
Or the orcs.
Sphere of annihilation flattened out in a doorway that you can't see.
Yeah. Right, or orcs, the orcs in Moria. So the two influences. Well, the first thing that was interesting is the first piece of inspiration was the German plastic model kit that Dave used to represent the Castle Blackmoor. So he said immediately looking at that, he was inspired, what would be going on not only in the castle, but below.
Oh,
right.
Cool. Okay.
And so it was a Kibri Castle Bronzel. And so a neat plastic kit, the quote is, a neat plastic kit where I imagine all sorts of fantasy settings, it would make. So the Blackmoor Gazette has a quote from him saying, and it was the first time he said that below the castle was where the heroes went looking for adventure and treasure. And he actually designed six levels of this dungeon below the castle itself. So when we talk about where this inspiration came from, so you look at both The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings by Tolkien. So the Goblin King's warrens under the Misty Mountains, the dungeon halls of the ancient dwarves.
Right, okay.
And in Lord of the Rings, of course, Moria. So the quote that gives us the clues and what we're actually going to look at is a local TV station. This is Dave talking about in an interview in 1978. A local TV station had several old monster movies, which I watched while eating popcorn and reading old Conan novels. So
way to multitask.
It was, right. So it was then that the Blackmoor Dungeon was conceived. Okay, so we've got Conan novels.
Yep.
We've got television in the 70s.
I'm disappointed that popcorn didn't become a bigger element.
Right. The writer of the blog post then referred to the old, specifically at that time,
my goodness,
those stations, what he would have been watching. And the things that came up during that time period would have been House of Dracula with 1945. And there are very definitely similarities between Castle Blackmoor and Dracula's castle. Things like
Three Vampire Wives, because that's all I'm interested in. No,
the laboratories and torture chambers and tunnels beneath the castle that lead to seaside caves.
Yeah, okay.
And then also things and the other. So that was the big parallel, and there was and so the things that kept coming up in the Universal monster movies. Okay. Yep. So that specifically did air
all
at that
filmed
time.
On the same set.
Right. Yeah, right. And those very specifically, so that movie specifically did air during that time. Okay. So it was probably something that he saw at that time. And then talking about the Conan stories. So Hour of the Dragon,
which is the only full length. One?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And so Conan is imprisoned in a dungeon.
Yep, yep.
And one of the slave girl that is that gives Conan a map says, beyond these dungeons lie the pits, which are the doors to hell.
Yep, yep.
So very specifically, Rogues in the House.
Ooh.
Was also below the House of the Red Priest.
Yeah, so, that's a good one.
Right, right. So it's the same ambience as a dungeon. Mm-hmm. The Scarlet Citadel.
Which got reused in Hour of the Dragon.
Oh, right, right, right.
Basically, Hour of the Dragon is a longer I got to bust out my Conan knowledge somewhere, right? Hour of the Dragon is kind of like a longer version of the Scarlet Citadel,
mm-hmm.
where like, yeah, okay, he's under the castle and he escapes from Zaltotin and stuff. Yeah, that's a pretty creepy one.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And so, yeah, this is definitely something that he would have been reading at that time. And so those combined elements, so Universal monster movies and Conan novels, and already with the existence of what Tolkien had kind of covered, created the tunnels and dungeons that we now know from the Dungeon
Crawl. Yeah, I can definitely see Rogues in the House, because if I remember that one correctly, like Conan goes there to like assassinate someone, kind of gets tricked, falls into a pit. And with like two other companions,
mm-hmm.
I think, and they kind of got to like work back up through the house. And that one's noticeable because it has things like the giant wall of crystal
mm-hmm.
that's entirely kind of like see-through to kind of like put up like gas traps where like you think you can get through this door and stuff like that. And yeah, nice. That one has a lot of traps and pits and Scarlet Citadel and Hour of the Dragon. Again, lots of pits and traps and monsters and kind of start out as a dungeon. So here's, you know, this moldering skeleton shackled to a wall and,
mm-hmm.
you know, oh, look at the bones. Oh, something's lurking in here because something's been chewing on those bones, that kind of thing. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, so all of those, I mean, and we're talking about stuff from like the, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, all kind of like, you know, coinciding.
In some drugs in the 70s.
Yeah, right. But yeah, in the imagination of Dave Arneson in the early 70s. So I think that's really funny. So the quote of from the blog entry, in the process, Gary's imagination and broad knowledge of sword and sorcery and countless other details are inseparable from the game. But ultimately, the dungeon crawl proved so compelling that it took root in popular culture.
So what I'm hearing is it should be Arneson's name on everything.
Yeah, well, yeah,
it should be as the Arneson turns right. And all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious to see. There's a book that was just came out, kind of talking about the same person that did Playing at the World,
okay.
The same researcher. So pretty exhaustive, talking about the split and the contributions.
Well, what I also heard from this is they were playing Dungeons and Dragons
mm-hmm.
before Dave Arneson came up with Castle Blackmoor and the six levels that they adventured beneath it. What the fuck were they doing? Right? Oh. And that's not like a negative, like, okay, like if the players in this game went, wow, that like dungeon crawling was amazing. Mm. Like I am now sold on this game.
Right.
I kind of want to know
what
was it before?
What were they playing before is basically diplomacy. So they took their
sorry.
So it was interesting that the evolution of that was so interesting because they're playing Napoleonics, basically wargaming, and then chose one general or one character, fleshed it out, and then they, created the world of Blackmoor. And the first game was just basically the kind of political mm-hmm. negotiations, and so basically playing it like diplomacy, where the GM is in the other room and people like periodically go and give orders and say what they're doing. And so they really liked that idea. And then once it was revealed that now there's a dungeon underneath the castle, then we get what is more recognizable.
So what I'm hearing now is you stole that from Bronstein too.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
What did you fucking do, Gary, other than slap your name on shit?
Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah,
if you want to complain, please don't.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm sorry. Yeah, so that was talking about... So all of this was kind of collected by Arneson, and then Gary played one of those games and became very inspired by that imagination, and that's how they started to want to flesh out Dungeons & Dragons.
Cool.
Because previous to that, they didn't have...
Dungeons or Dragons?
Yeah, right, right. It wasn't Dungeons or Dragons. And there's a great... in one of the comments on this post, there was a great quote about what D&D is.
Mm.
So D&D is an elf from Tolkien, a barbarian from Howard, a mage from Vance, fighting monsters from Lovecraft in a room that looks like it may have been designed by Wells or Geiger.
Yeah, nice.
And that's a perfect summation of all the, you know, kind of pop culture that coalesced to create. Yeah,
and
create that.
Now it's this very distinct melange. Right. Everyone tries to emulate. Like, I would actually be kind of like, knowing that, and I'll have to go read this blog post. It's pretty interesting to know what the origin of such a quintessential nerd activity is now. I would almost want to do some kind of like game jam or not sponsor because I have no money, but like, okay, let's go back and let's look at the original inspirations for dungeon crawling. And with everything we know about now about role-playing games, let's use these same ingredients what would it kind of look like now?
Interesting. Yeah. To take the same inspirations and find out like what would come out of some.
Almost kind of like deconstruct it. Right? In other words, just put the basic ingredients on a plate and say, here you go, that'll be $100.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, still so many of the inspirations are kind of boy hobbies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it would be interesting filtered through.
New idea. Take whatever the, quote, girl equivalent is those things from the same time period and turn it into a role-playing game.
Right. Oh, that would be.
I have no idea what that would be.
That would be interesting because the novels would be very different and the television, you would. You would end up just with lasers and feelings.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm getting confused with the gothic horror novel covers that are always woman in nightdress runs from something. That's usually just a hulking house, right? Anyway.
Right. Nice. But I thought that was great. So I'll put a link to that blog entry or the blog post if you want to read.
I'm going to go read that because while I cannot devote that level of research to something, I do enjoy reading that kind of thing.
Yeah, so. It's really fun. Yeah. So thank you, DM David, for the for that post. I will, we'll
put up a link.
Put up a link and credit you on that because that was a great, great piece of writing. And one more thing, a bundle. So this is a compatible bundle. So it's the Mjölkborg compatible bundle, which means it does not include the original rule book. So you do have to have a copy of the original Mjölkborg to play. But this is the heavy metal art punk fantasy RPG setting. And this is a great bundle. But the thing that I realized is there is so much for this game.
Yeah,
there's a huge amount of development for this game.
That's what happens when you aren't an asshole and say,
you
like our game? Make something for it. We'll even give you, like, within reason, some of the tools so that you can kind of have a uniform look with the stuff we made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's good. I think
they probably won't see you into oblivion if you do something wrong. Yeah,
right. Or force you to post it in a certain place or sell it a certain way. Yeah, that's great. So this is a bundle of holding, and their starter collection gives you two massive adventures by Adam Barton, a box of shadows, and the Bridges of Moher and the Endless. Bridges of Moher and the Endless Sea. And the two supplements from Philip Reed, Callow's Book of Monsters and the Tower of Scoundrels, and Richard Kelly's Fiskbjörg, which is, yes, it is. It is the much-needed rules for sinister and ominous fishing in the setting.
Like, that could actually be terrifying. Like, I don't want to know what you drag out of an ocean in this setting. Like, just leave it wherever it is, please.
Right. And then if you level up to it started at $24.95. Mm-hmm. You get their entire bonus collection, which does include the books we're looking at here. So it includes Forbidden Psalm, two major adventures by Christian Eichhorn, The Vaults of Torment, Blood is the Fuel, and The Temple of the Kraken God, as well as The Masticator Gate from Skeleton Key Games. And I don't think it includes the expansion, just the original Forbidden Psalm, which is plenty. I mean, this is an extension of all of the another set of scenarios. So there's already a lot in the original book. So that's a lot for the...
what's the current level up price?
The game, I don't have that.
But it's fluctuates.
It's probably 20-something. It's probably around 20 something, but there's a tremendous amount of things, and I'll post a few of the links just so you can see, like, so a link to the to drive through if you need to get a copy of the original book, but there are also just the Mjölkborg.com has a huge amount of free downloads and resources. There's a Medium page, which has, they kind of document the first year of the game's development and the game's release. There is a fan site, an Ex Libris fan site, a Google Sheet with a comprehensive list of player and GM resources. And if you go to itch.io, over 300 titles that are set in the Mjölkborg.
And have some kind of Bjorg in the title, probably.
Everything is, right. So there's a ton. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff out there, and this will get you started. And I definitely think Forbidden Psalm, if you're into miniature skirmish games at all, it's a great, and if you like the dark metal setting, it's a great version of that.
We got to play that. There's so many. Like,
Yes.
I think 2022 is going to be like the year where I finally give in and say, like, okay, I said I was never going to get back into miniature war games. How many have I collected over the past year?
Right.
Sludge, Turnip, Forbidden Psalm. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at something called like Baron's War, which is like medieval skirmish. We've got all those games from One Page Rules, Frostgrave, Silver Bayonet.
Yes.
Rangers of Shadow. I'm just like, okay, yeah, you win. No. Mm. Miniatures games, if we can.
Yeah. No, definitely. As soon as we can start, getting together more often. Yeah, so that's something we'll maybe talk about next week. Ooh. The other way to miniatures war game online is had a little bit of controversy.
Oh,
so the platform.
Oh, that's what we got.
Yeah, the digital platform.
Yep. All right.
For doing that. It said they're trying to be family friendly. So stay tuned. next week we'll cover.
We all know what that means. Yeah.
we'll cover the little bit of controversy and see what if they did anything beyond their initial non-apology. Right. It was kind of one of those, yeah.
It's so, not hard to apologize, except obviously for some people it is.
Yeah. So we're talking about Tabletop Simulator, which we'll catch you up on next week. And it's a pretty competitive market, so they got to be careful not to vilify themselves.
Or brand themselves as the site for Nazis.
Yeah, right. just
right. Yeah, sorry.
So we'll see. We'll see how that has developed when we're back next week. Yep. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, that's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I kind of doing a little review of the Tin Helm. Nobody can see that tiny little thing. But Tin Helm is a perilous solo micro quest designed by Jason Glover. I think it's Grey Gnome Games. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I picked it up is it's a solo dungeon crawl, which I'm already always interested in. It's card-based, which I'm also interested in. Mm-hmm. And you can get it from GameCrafter.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was a way for me to check components and stuff
that.
And it plays in half an hour. You lay out your little cards, and you adventure through a dungeon, and it's all solo, and I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, that's what I'm talking about most recently.
Nice.
So,
the quality of the components is nice.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
I really like the snap of the cards that the Game Crafter has. And there's all kinds of, a bunch of cards, acrylic cubes, a little meeple, and some dice. And it's just nice what fits in such a small little mint tin component.
Where are they based out of, the Game Master?
Are they U.S.? They're U.S., but I forget exactly where, which is why it took so long to show up. Unfortunately. But, yeah. So how about you? What can people find you?
So I do a single panel gag cartoon that I live stream the drawing of. So that's Monday nights, North American time, and Abuse Cartoons on both YouTube and Twitch. And then abusecartoons.com if you want to see the website and links to everything. And the archive is on GoComics. So gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you want to support what we're doing here with the weekly, please visit upturntable.com. You can find everything that we've been doing for the channel. And then, of course, on YouTube and Twitch, UpturnTable. And if you want to become a weakling and directly support exactly what's going on here, patreon.com/upturntable. And there's various levels of support.
Weakling will never not be funny. Sorry.
Yes. And and on all social media, UpturnTable. So that'll do it for this week.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll be back again next week.
Little mortals.
Goodbye.